the Napoleon of Notting Hill. The city is full of horse buses and hansom cabs, but democracy is dead, and the king is chosen by lottery. No one cares, because none of it matters. Until the choice falls on Auberon Quinn.
Anything you need, Mr. Chesterton?
The prayers of the faithful.
You know the drill. You've delivered enough talks in your time.
That was half a century ago. Things have surely changed since I departed for other spheres.
All we need is a few words of introduction. You were writing in 1904. You know, the London you imagined and the London we live in now are not exactly the same.
Well, I made no pretense to scientific prophecy. The soul of man was what concerned me, not the machinery that pretends to order his existence.
Would you like to talk about that then, Mr. Chesterton?
Yes, certainly.
Well, I'll give you a green light. 2 seconds.
Good evening. I address myself to those of you who still belong to the human race, even though I no longer share that privilege. Now, the human race has been playing at children's games from the beginning and will probably do so till the end, which is a nuisance to the few people who grow up. And one of the games to which it is most attached is called Cheat the Prophet. What happens is this. The players listen carefully and respectfully to all that the clever men have to say about what will happen to the next generation. They wait until all the clever men are dead and bury them nicely. Then they go and do something entirely different. That is all. For a race of simple tastes, however, it is great fun. Allow me to demonstrate the workings of this game with the aid of 3 young government clerks, the Honourable James Barker, Mr. Wilfred Lambert, and Mr. Auberon Quinn. It is 1984, and we are in London. Yes, sound effects, if you please. No, London. My London.
Sorry.
I say, you know what you two look like?
Come on, Auberon.
Listen, you're just like...
Come along, Quinn. What are you up to?
I've been walking behind you for some time. For years and years, actually. And today's the first time I've realized that you make a pair of really splendid elephants. It's your frock coats.
What nonsense you do talk, Auberon.
I assure you, James, that for a moment you turn these dull old streets into a luxuriant jungle. And as for you, Lambert,
just a minute. I wrote dragons, not elephants.
I know. I'm afraid we didn't have any dragons on this.
What about me?
Your nose.
What's wrong with it?
Oh, nothing. It may be rather large, but it's as delicate as a tree.
Now, look here.
Really, quite handsome. Do you know a little shop anywhere where they can cut your hair properly?
Oh, you're impossible, Quinn.
I'm always having it cut, but it will keep on growing again. Oh, look. There's a little place. You know, I often find hairdressers when I walk around in London. I'm awfully fond of them. They're so much nicer than those nasty butchers, don't you think? I join you for lunch at Chikunani's.
What on earth do you make of him?
Dropped on his head as a kid, I should think.
No, Lambert, I don't think it's that. Actually, I've sometimes fancied he was a sort of artist.
Oh, bosh.
Well, you know, artistic fooling and all that kind of thing. Trouble is, he's talked nonsense for so long, he no longer knows the difference between it and sense.
No, I don't follow.
But all I'm trying to say is that Quinn's gone all the way round the mental world and found that idiocy is much the same as sense.
Tell you something. I heard a girl say the other day that when she first saw him, you know, with that round owl's head on that round baby's body, she thought he was a small boy and was going to take him on her knee.
Lucky fellow. And did she?
No, of course not. Once he opened his mouth, she realized a boy would have been more intelligent. I say, there he is already at Chikunani's. How the devil did he get there so quick?
I've been waiting quite a long time. It's awfully funny to see you walking up the street.
What's funny about it? You told us to come here.
My mother used to tell people to come to this. Shall we go in?
Hold on. What are all those people doing?
They seem to be following that chap in fancy dress.
Perhaps he's foreign.
Well, he certainly can't be English. Oh, that uniform. All those bright colours. And medals. We haven't given out medals since... When did we last give out medals, Barker?
I say... Look at his sword. Don't you love his sword?
He must have pinched it from a museum.
What the devil's he doing?
He's tearing a strip of paper from that mustard advertisement.
Is there anyone who would be so good as to lend me a pin?
I've got one. Here.
Oh, sir, I thank you for your courteous generosity.
Well, that's all right. If there's anything else, I can...
Red.
I beg your pardon?
Sir, I beg yours.
I meant, what do you mean by red?
I was wondering, esteemed sir, if you or any of these distinguished ladies and gentlemen had any red about you.
Well, really, I don't think I'd... Though I used to carry a red bandana once.
James, where's your red cockatoo?
What are you talking about? You've never seen me with a red cockatoo.
I know. Where's it been all this time?
I'm sorry, sir. You must forgive my friend. Regretfully, none of us seems to have any red about us.
Oh, do not trouble yourself, senor. I can fulfill my own requirements. My sword is still sharp.
What? Oh, I say, old chap, you cut yourself.
That was what I intended to do, senor. Now, if I wrap this strip from my handkerchief around my hand, so... Ah, there. It is covered in red. Since you are so generous, senor, may I crave the indulgence of another pin?
Another? Oh, certainly.
So, I attach the red to the yellow and the green. And I have to thank you all for your great kindness and courtesy.
Senor! Senor, por favor!
What the devil's Quinn doing now?
Oh.
What's that jabber?
Do you know, I believe that's Spanish.
Sir, it is an unlooked-for honor, and I accept... with the greatest of pleasure.
What are they saying?
I think he's joining us for lunch.
Good God.
Now, sir, that we are able to talk privately.
Fish is good today.
Perhaps you would tell us, sir, if it is not rude of me to ask, why you did what you did.
To explain that, senor, it is enough merely to tell you who I am. I am Juan del Fuego, president of Nicaragua.
The honor is ours and so forth. But the yellow paper and the red rag...
The yellow and the red are the colors of Nicaragua.
You were Nicaragua's president then when it made its last... I must confess that I... Well, that is, we moderns have doubts about such things as well. Nicaraguan independence.
So, your sympathies lie entirely with the big powers?
Pardon me, Mr. President, but my sympathies lie with no nation. We believe in one great cosmopolitan civilization which includes all the talents of the absorbed peoples. Mm.
Your pardon, senor, but what makes you think your civilization will last forever when the world is full of its failures?
You've obviously been out of Europe a good while. Many things have changed.
You mean England is no longer a democracy?
Oh, that's very funny, old chap.
Oh, forgive us, Mr. President, but the situation invites paradox. England, in a sense, is a democracy of the purest kind. It is a despotism.
How so?
The old democrats believed that all men were equally intelligent. Now, our form of democracy is founded on the fact that all men are equally idiotic. Any one of them will do to rule over us, as long as he isn't criminal or insane. All he has to do, after all, is sign a few proclamations and so forth. The rest is done, as it always has been, by officials like Lambert, Quinn, and me.
So, how do you choose this monarch of yours?
Pure chance, my dear fellow. Picked from a list, like a juryman.
Do you mean to tell me that you trust to an alphabetical list to choose an ordinary man to whom you give absolute power?
Why not?
I would rather be a toad in a ditch. You cannot argue with the choice of the soul.
I don't know much about the soul, but speaking in the interests of the public...
Excuse me, gentlemen. I think I need a breath of air.
Are you all right, Quinn, old chap? Off your feet? Feel bad, do you?
Not bad, exactly. Rather good, if anything. I just want to meditate on the lovely words that have just been spoken. Speaking in the interests of the public. It's such a wonderful phrase. One cannot get the honey from such things without being alone for a while. Forgive me.
You know, I think he really is off his chump.
In my humble opinion, Senor Quinn is a man who cares for nothing but a joke. That makes him a dangerous man.
Dangerous? Oh, you don't know little Quinn, Mr. President.
Every man is dangerous who cares only for one thing, Senor Lambert. There was a time when I was dangerous myself.
Speaking in the interests of the public. Speaking in the interests of the public. Speaking in the... As it's such a lovely day, I'll tell you a joke, shall I?
Must you spoil our walk in the park?
Spoil it, Wilfred? Just listen. In a little square garden of yellow roses beside the sea, there was a nonconformist minister who had never been to Wimbledon.
Oh.
Now, hold on, James. It's not finished yet. His family didn't understand him. But one day they heard that a body had been found on the shore, badly battered, but wearing patent leather boots.
Is that it?
As it happened, the body wasn't the minister's at all. But in the dead man's pocket, there was a return ticket to Maidstone. That is the true test of humour. To consider an anecdote excruciatingly funny and say nothing. Only vulgar humour is received with belly laughs. The really great story is received in silence, like a blessing. You feel pretty blessed, don't you, James?
I see the point, I suppose.
I've got lots of stories like that.
Now, look here, Oberon, you must stop all this. It's rubbish and you know it.
Rubbish?
There was nothing funny in that story about the nonconformist minister, was there?
Well, I must admit that I didn't see the joke, but James did. He said as much.
Look here, Oberon.
You see? Why can't you be like other people, Quinn? Why can't you either say something really funny or shut up? The man who slips on the banana skin is funnier than you.
Lambert, whatever you may look like, you are a great and good man. You were a revolutionary, fit to have a statue erected in your memory, like Luther or Danton. You have made, my dear fellow, the new humour, the last of the superstitions.
What the dickens do you mean?
I just want to give you a serious warning. Don't challenge me to do anything outrageous, like slipping on a banana skin. I'm a man whose soul has been emptied of all pleasure but folly. And for 2 pence, I'd do it.
Go ahead. It would be funnier than the bosh you talk.
Be careful. I am possessed by the madness of the utterly idle man.
Whatever possesses you, I'd rather you stood on your silly head than talk the way you do.
Oh.
Oberon, for goodness sake. You can't stand on your head in front of all these people. Think of your position.
No, I am.
Think of ours, then.
Yes. Look here, Quinn. I didn't mean it, you know. Oh, get up. There's a good chap. Besides, you're losing all your loose change.
See what you've done now, Lambert. Now he's turning somersaults.
Oh, why don't we just leave him, Barker? Look, here come the police. They'll take care of him. Yeah, hello, officer. There's your man. He's nothing to do with us.
We haven't come about that, sir. We've come from headquarters.
I say, it isn't that serious, is it?
Actually, sir, we've come to announce the selection of His Majesty the King. You gentlemen know the rule that the news be brought to the new sovereign at once, wherever he is. We followed you all across the park.
And which one of us, may I ask?
Sorry to say, Mr. Barker, it isn't you, though we know all about the good work you do.
Oh, don't say it's me. You're not going to tell me that I'm the Tsar of all the Russians?
Afraid not, Mr. Lambert, sir. The gentleman we have to congratulate appears to be rather occupied at the moment.
Not Quinn! Oberon, for God's sake, pull yourself together. Take your head out from between your legs and stop mooing. You've been made king.
I am not worthy.
though I can probably claim to be the first monarch ever to speak to his people from this position.
Don't you understand? It's not a joke, Oberon. They've really made you king. God knows why. Oh, stand up, man. Help me, Barker. He ought to be on the right side up, at least.
Now, the bishops in the Middle Ages were in the habit of refusing the honor of election 3 times and then accepting. I differ from them merely in detail. I will accept 3 times and refuse afterwards. Oh, my faithful people, I promise you a banquet of humor.
Oh, look here, you idiot. I mean, Your Majesty.
Was it not you who told me, Wilfred Lambert, that I should adopt a more popular form of humor? Is that not even more important now, when I've become the darling of an entire nation? Officer.
Yes, Your Majesty.
What are those ceremonies for my entry into the city?
Ceremonies? Your Majesty, I fear they have been neglected for some little time.
Then you will kindly help me on with this coat.
But you're taking it off, Oberon. Be sensible, can't you?
I am taking my coat off so that this officer may help me on with it. Officer?
But, Your Majesty, if you put it on that way, it will be back to front.
All ceremony is the reverse of the obvious. When men wish to be priests or judges, they dress up like women. This is the nearest we can come to ritual. Lead on.
What is that? What is that?
Quite so. Your Majesty,
My dear James! Now, before you say anything, just give me your hat, if you please.
My hat? What for?
Hand it over.
Here you are. But what of a... You sat on it and squashed it flat.
In accordance with ancient custom, when the king in his royal palace receives representatives of the House of Barker, the latter's hat is always sat on in this manner. Oh. It is an act of homage. Ah, until you wear this hat again, which isn't likely considering the state it's in, the House of Barker will not rebel against the crown of England.
Look here, are you completely mad?
Not at all. Madmen are always serious, haven't you noticed? They go mad from lack of humour. As a matter of fact, you're looking a bit serious yourself, James.
Why can't you keep your jokes private? The interests of the public
are better served by honest humour than false gravity. Come now, James. Everyone thinks one should be serious on state occasions and save laughter and jokes for the fireside. My sense of humour suggests the opposite. That's all. I believe one should make banquets and coronations and parliaments one great roaring farce and save gravity for when one is alone.
You'll ruin the country, that's all.
It seems to me, representative of the House of Barker, that you are breaking centuries of tradition and rebelling against your lawful king. I would hate to see this hat back on your head, considering the mess I've made of it.
How can you care about nothing but your silly games?
I took an oath not to talk seriously, which always means answering silly questions. But a strong man is gentle with politicians. Why don't I care for anything but my games? Can you tell me, in the name of all the gods you don't believe in, why I should care for anything else?
What about the needs of the public?
What have these damn Victorian ethics to do with the England of 1984? What good has it ever done anyone to feel public-spirited? You and I are English gentlemen, James, but gentlemen with differing tastes. Does that answer you? It is my humour, and that is all I shall say on the matter.
But, Oberon,
I have uttered my last serious word. And I trust I will never have to utter another for as long as I live in this paradise of fools. But I hope our conversation will continue. I propose to conduct my half of it in a language I've just invented, which consists of opening and closing the lips rapidly while altering the shape of the cheeks. I copied it from the royal goldfish.
Look here. Oh, you really can't. I mean, what about... Oh, damn it, all to hell.
Observe, my dear Lambert, how mingling with one's people promotes in one a sense of...
Are you all right, old chap?
I'm the king of the castle.
You have just hit the king in the stomach with that stick of yours, that's what?
It's not a stick, it's my sword. Give it back, it's mine.
Not before you said you're sorry to his majesty.
No, no. I'm just looking for the notes I made for my dying speech.
Here they are. Death at hands of injured husband. One if repentant, one if cynical. No, not going to. Death caused by former friend. No, that's not right either. Yeah. Death by assassination. What do you think, Lambert?
You must be all right, for you're talking nonsense as usual.
You're not fond of children, are you, Lambert? I am, you see. All of us who are fond of the ridiculous are fond of children. Perhaps I should make a law. One should do something for future generations, don't you think?
Can I have my sword back now? Please.
My child, kneel down.
Don't encourage him, Oberon.
What for?
Do as the king says, boy.
Don't you want to be honoured for your stalwart defence of Notting Hill, which happens to be my favourite spot? You are ready, are you not, my child, to die for this sacred mountain, even if it were ringed with all the armies of Bayswater?
Where are their armies? I'd fight them.
I say, what an idea.
What's up now?
I think I've just had the noblest of all my conceptions. The old medieval cities revived in place of our glorious suburbs. Think of it, Lambert.
I don't know what you're talking about, though that's nothing unusual.
Clapham, equipped with a city guard. Wimbledon provided with a city wall. Surbiton with its own troop of halberdiers. West Hampstead with its own heraldic standard borne before it in battle. Wonderful. It shall be done.
I, the king, have spoken.
Can I have my sword back now?
Here, my boy. Take it in honor of the noble idea you have just seen born. Use it to defend Notting Hill. Glory in the ancient customs you're about to see renewed. 1984 will be the year in which the dullness of our efficient and hygienic present was enlivened by the revival of the absurdities of our historic past.
The more astute members of my audience will have perceived that when the king had an idea, he pursued it with that single-minded devotion that distinguishes fools and children. He rushed from Notting Hill to the palace at a speed that excited some comment among a people accustomed to everything moving in slow and orderly fashion, and calling for coffee, he plunged into a profound study of the historic traditions, real or imagined, of the city boroughs. The result of his lucubrations was read to a meeting of the Society for the Recovery of London Antiquities. What the king proposed was a proclamation to be entitled the Charter of the Cities, which would reinstate the boroughs in all their ancient magnificence, providing each had a city wall that was closed at sunset, a city guard armed to the teeth, a banner, a coat of arms, and a gathering cry. This proposal was received with indescribable vagueness. Some of his hearers were indignant. An intellectual few laughed to themselves, but most did not know what to think. Perhaps most important to my story is that in the audience was a small, red-haired boy with blue eyes, who listened to the king with fixed attention. When the lecture was over, this boy, whom we've met once and shall soon meet again, left the hall in a state of great excitement. The king went home and armed himself with a whiskey and soda, some bits of cardboard, and a child's paint box. It was thus happily occupied that his friends Barker and Lambert found him.
In God's name, Oberon, what are you doing now?
Can't you see, James? I'm designing the borough's coat of arms.
Aren't they pretty? Well, you're not really going in for these city guards and walls and whatnot, are you?
Indeed I am. And why not? What's more, I've modelled them on the very principles you and Barker so admire.
What's that mean?
You don't sound very pleased. Shouldn't he be pleased, Barker?
I doubt it.
But each borough is to have its own provost, chosen by the same method as the king is chosen by, from an official list. There, how can you disapprove of that?
Don't you see, the whole thing's different. We're a despotism. The whole thing works from the centre. That way it doesn't matter who you appoint, as long as everything is held together. But what you're proposing, all these boroughs with their own forms of government, that's going to make it all fall apart. If any damn council can go to any damn man and make...
Ah, I see your problem. You're concerned that your talents for government may be neglected. I shall remedy that immediately, kneel down.
What for?
Do as your king commands. Splendid. I solemnly give to my liege subject, James Barker, this mark of my special favour. In my charter of the cities, shortly to be proclaimed as the law of the land, to James Barker I give in perpetuity, as long as he shall live, the honour of being Lord High Provost of South Kensington. Done and done. There.
What are you splashing me with paint for?
Just adding a touch of South Kensington's colours to your cheeks. Now, you're all right. Off you go.
But this isn't... It doesn't mean...
The audience is at an end, Provost.
The Charter of the Cities was proclaimed that very morning. The first reactions were on the whole favourable. Indeed, in some of the happy homes where reading was still practised, it was recited aloud to uproarious appreciation. But when it was discovered that the king was serious and really meant that boroughs should erect walls and appoint guards and march about with banners, then the reaction was angrier. Londoners didn't mind the king making a fool of himself, but they didn't relish him making a fool of them. The provost of West Kensington complained respectfully, of course, that it really was rather awkward for him not to be able to go out to post a letter without being accompanied by five heralds blowing trumpets.
Room for one only. Now, is it to be? Oh, sorry, Your Worship. I'm not allowed to take you without your halberdiers. One only. Hold tight.
The provost of North Kensington was a curt and businesslike draper named Buck. Being kept off his bus because there was no room for his retinue provoked him into writing a curt and businesslike letter of complaint to the king. But the king refused to entertain complaints from his provost unless they were accompanied by their trumpeters, standard-bearers, and a full complement of halberdiers. Since few provosts could be bothered to go to such lengths over trivial matters, complaints were not as numerous as they might have been. Indeed, 10 happy years passed without the king tiring of his joke. Until the great affair of Notting Hill, in which the aforementioned Mr. Buck figured prominently.
The Lord High Provost of North Kensington, Mr. Buck, desires an audience of His Majesty.
From North Kensington? What news did he bring of that Arctic region of high hills and fair women? Bid him welcome.
Let the North Kensington heralds advance. Make way for the 12 guards of His Excellency.
Clad in the proper purple, I'm happy to see. Very good.
The standard bearer of North Kensington dips his banner in homage to Your Majesty.
You know, I've always liked the eagle of North Kensington, one of my happier designs, I believe. It has sort of Russian overtones, appropriate to the remote fastnesses of that city.
The bearer of the key of North Kensington presents itself to Your Majesty and begs you to accept his token of fealty.
I do. And now, where...
The Lord High Provost of North Kensington, Mr. Buck.
And a right royal greeting to you, cousin.
Your Majesty, I'm in a very great hurry.
Never mind.
Come on, what? This is urgent.
I have no doubt you will do it next time.
May I ask what your majesty is on about?
You won't mind me telling you. Not that I myself attach too much importance to ceremony, you understand. I mean, an honest heart is of more value than mere adherence.
Can we come to the business in hand, your majesty?
Just for form's sake. It is usual, I say usual, that is all, for a provost entering the presence of royalty to lie on his back on the floor and raising his feet to heaven, whence comes all sovereign power, he should say three times over, monarchical institutions improve the manners.
Stop.
But there again, such pomp is less dignified than your own simple kindliness, is it not? What pleasant weather we're having. Don't you find your robes a trifle warm?
They're as hot as hell.
There you are, you see. I designed them for your own snowbound territory, not for the more temperate climate of our seat of power.
I live not 20 minutes' walk away, your majesty, and I've come here on business.
Right. 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 Business, as the sad, glad old Persian said, is business. Be punctual. Get up early. Point the pen to the shoulder. Point the pen.
Your majesty may have heard of Hammersmith.
Indeed, Provost. Named after its primal hero, the famous blacksmith who led the democracy of the Broadway into battle. Driving the chivalry of Kensington before him, he slew so many of them that the site is still called Kensington Gore. And at the banquet afterwards...
In Hammersmith, there is this thing called a rote.
The chivalry would not join in the songs of the victors. So the great blacksmith said, little birds that can sing and won't sing must be made to sing. And the defeated knights were called can-sings or ken-sings ever afterwards. But you were saying...
For 10 years, I, that is my colleagues and I, have been working in the public interest to build a much-needed motorway that would terminate at Hammersmith Broadway.
Historic site?
That's as might be. All I know is that we've been buying up property and getting compulsory purchase orders and swearing vested interest and spending a great deal of money. And now, at the very end, the whole thing is brought to a halt by one young fool.
And who is this rash youth?
Name of Adam Wayne. And we dealt with the old provost of Notting Hill very satisfactorily. He was no trouble at all. But then he went and died, and young Wayne got chosen to succeed him. Now, I don't know what game he's playing. But all I can tell you is, we offered him a price any ordinary person would have jumped at, and he won't accept. He won't let the road go through Notting Hill. And the worst is... He somehow got his council to back him up. It's midsummer madness.
What a perfect phrase that is.
What I am getting at is, there's only one dirty little street we need, and he won't sell. Pump Street, which has got nothing but a pub and a few miserable shops. All the respectable people are not in ill have accepted our offers. Why should Adam Wayne stick out against the wishes of the majority over silly little Pump Street?
If you want our royal advice... Why can't you just leave him alone?
And give up on the old scheme? I'm damned if we do. Me? I'm all for sending in workmen to pull down Pump Street without any more nonsense.
There speaks the proud purple eagle of North King.
If your majesty would spend less time insulting respectable people with your silly heraldry and more time on the business of the nation...
If I may say so, you haven't got the stance quite right.
What?
When the proud baron of business defies the king in his own palace, your head should be back a little further and your right arm extended. Oh, no. What you do with your left arm, I leave to your private convictions. Would you like to give it another go?
Now, look here!
The Lord Mayor promised to page war. I, Mr. Wilson, desires an audience of his majesty.
Admit him immediately. I say this is a jolly day. Splendid. Splendid. And where is our cousin of Bayswater?
I am here, your majesty, behind this here banner.
My dear provost, so overcome were we by the splendor of your green and silver entourage that we miss seeing you altogether. What can we get you?
It's about this Pump Street business.
I have been trying to explain the situation to his majesty, Wilson. I'm not sure he appreciates how deeply the matter affects you as well.
Oh, it affects both of us, your majesty. In fact, it affects the whole neighbourhood, for whose benefit we started the scheme. Mr. Buck and me, we put our heads together.
Oh, perfect. Your heads together, I can see it. Won't you do it now? Oh, please, do it now.
Here, your majesty.
Mr. Parker wishes to enter the royal presence.
James! Now, what can he want? judging by our memory of past friendship, something for himself. Money, I shouldn't wonder. Is that not why we clad him and his halberdiers in azure and gold? James, my dear fellow, are you quite well?
Look here, Hogan. Oh, I beg your Majesty's pardon. Forgive my hurry, but it's about this chap and Pump Street. I see Buck and Wilson are here. Have they made you aware of the seriousness of the situation?
There is one thing necessary.
What does your Majesty think that is?
We have the purple of North Kensington billowing around South Kensington's dark blue and shading into the woodland green of Bayswater. What we need is a little yellow. Send for the Provost of West Kensington.
Never come in last week.
Splendid. West Kensington. Now, your yellow should stand between Bayswater's green and South Kensington's blue.
Lovely.
And yet...
Your Majesty, if we come to the matter of Pump Street...
Something's missing.
No use, he's off his chump.
What is lacking? What we really need is...
Lord High Provost of Notting Hill, Mr. Adam Wayne!
That's it! The flaming red of Notting Hill, the final touch. Observe, gentlemen, the way these things should be done. See with what dignity the men of Notting Hill take up their positions, and compare that with the apologetic slouching and shuffling of your own guards.
I bring homage to my king. I bring him the only thing I have, my sword.
I beg your pardon?
Sire, I am a child of your great charter of the cities. I stand here for the rights that charter gave me, and I swear by your sacred crown that where I stand fast.
Has the whole world gone quite mad?
Yes, Mr. Buck. The whole world is mad, save for Adam Wayne and me. James, do you remember what I told you long ago? Seriousness makes men mad. You are mad, my dear James, because you care for nothing but politics, which makes you as mad as a man who spends his life collecting old bus tickets. You are mad, my dear Mr. Buck, because you only care for money, which is a madness like that of the man who lives on opium. Mr. Wilson is mad because he thinks he is right, which is as mad as a man believing he is God. West Kensington is mad because he thinks himself respectable, which is as mad as thinking yourself a chicken. Only humorists are not mad because they care for nothing and so possess everything. And until this moment, I thought I was the only humorist in the realm. But this young man, this provost of Notting Hill, he alone has seen how to bowl me out. He has answered me back, vaunt for vaunt, rhetoric for rhetoric. Listen and learn. So, you have come, Mr. Wayne, about Pump Street.
About the city of Notting Hill, Your Majesty, of which Pump Street is a living and rejoicing part.
Wonderfully said.
You couldn't call Pump Street a very large part of Notting Hill, now could you, Wayne?
That which is large enough for the rich to covet is large enough for the poor to defend.
Excellent, sweet brothers.
Look here, Wayne. Every respectable person in Notting Hill is for us and against you. I know, for I've plenty of friends there.
Your friends are those who have taken your gold in exchange for other men's hearthstones, my Lord Buck. I can well understand their friendship for you.
At least I've never sold them short.
That they have done by selling themselves.
It's no good, my Buckling. You can't cope with the eloquence of an artist. Praise the Lord that I should have lived to see this day. And so, Provost Wayne, you stand firm.
If I stood firm before, shall I weaken now that I have seen the face of my king? I fight for your royal vision, for that great dream you had of the League of the Free Cities.
It's too much. Brother artist, let me ask you a solemn question. Adam Wayne, Lord High Provost of Notting Hill, don't you think the whole thing's splendid?
Splendid, it has the splendor of God.
Bowled out again. There you are, keeping the pose going. Funnily, of course, it is serious. But seriously, isn't it funny?
What's funny, Your Majesty?
Luke, you don't have to play anymore. The whole business of the Charter of the Cities, isn't it marvellous?
Marvellous is scarcely a word worthy to be used of so glorious a design.
Look, damn it! Ah, I see. You want the room cleared of reasonable men. You want the two humorists alone together. And so it shall be. Gentlemen, I beg you to leave us.
Your Majesty cannot just leave the whole matter in
oh,
the air.
Oh, for God's sake!
Your Majesty's take nothing to finish the business.
Be gone! It is a royal command.
Let's leave these two lunatics to play their games together. We'll just have to think of another way.
My dear fellow, we were made for each other. You were wonderful. The valiant struggle for independence of Pump Street. That's the real thing, the deification of the ludicrous.
Ludicrous?
Oh, come on, you don't have to keep it up with me. Let's enjoy the thing, not as actors, but as critics. Isn't it a joke?
I do not understand, Your Majesty. I cannot believe that while I fight for your royal charter, Your Majesty would desert me for those dogs hunting for gold.
Really, my dear fellow, you can't expect... What is it? Tears? Why? What's the matter?
I may be only a boy, but I swear I would paint the red lion on my shield if I had nothing but blood.
Great God in heaven. Is it possible that within the four seas of Britain there is a man who takes Notting Hill seriously?
And by the great God in heaven, is it possible that there is within these four seas a man who does not take it seriously?
If this goes on, I shall begin to doubt the superiority of art to life. Look here, Adam Wayne, no more jokes. Do you mean that you really are a Notting Hill patriot?
To the last drop of my blood.
All right, I believe you. Tell me something. Where did you get this miraculously mad idea?
You have been my tutor, sire, in all that is high and honourable.
Eh?
It was Your Majesty who first stirred my patriotism into flame. 10 years ago, when I was but a child, I was playing in Pump Street, waving a wooden sword about and dreaming of great wars. During my game, I struck out and then stood petrified, for I saw that I had struck you, sire. As you wandered in noble secrecy about your city, watching over your people's welfare. But I need not have been afraid. In words that are burned into my soul, you told me to turn my sword against the enemies of my city. Pointing to the hill of Notting, you ordered me to be ready to die for the sacred mountain, even if it were ringed with all the armies of Bayswater. And now the hour you've prophesied has come. And at your feet lies the sword with which I am ready to die.
Lord. Lord, what a life. All my own work. So you're the red-haired boy that hit me in the waistcoat. And what have I done? I thought I'd have a joke and I seem to have created a passion. I tried to compose a farce and it appears to be turning into an epic. My dear Adam, wasn't my joke broad enough?
Your Majesty.
You really don't think that the idea of Notting Hill as a sacred mountain is absurd?
Absurd? Why should I?
Why indeed?
Notting Hill is a piece of high ground on which men have built houses to live, in which they are born, fall in love, pray, marry and die. What is absurd about defending that?
Well, it is generally thought to have its... funny side.
Why should anyone laugh at the idea of the cause of Notting Hill, when in Notting Hill there are thousands of immortal spirits blazing alternately with hope and with fear?
It's difficult. Damned difficult. I see what you mean. I might even agree with you if I were young enough to be a poet or a prophet. It's just that when you proclaim the words Notting Hill like that, I can't help roaring with laughter.
I know it is hard not to laugh at the common name, sire. I only say we should not. I have thought of a remedy. But my thoughts are rather terrible.
Tell me.
I know of a magic wand. But it is one that few may rightly use, and that seldom. It is a fairy wand of great fear, stronger than those who use it, often frightful, even wicked. But whatever it touches is never again wholly common.
What on earth are you talking about?
The touch of it is the finger of strange perfection.
Where is this wand of yours?
It is at your feet, sir.
Your sword? No.
Yes, yes. The things touched by that are not vulgar. They become...
No, not the shedding of blood. Not simply to defend a blasted point of view.
Oh, you kings, you kings! How humane you are, how considerate. You will make war for a frontier or a tariff or to avenge an insult to a soldier. But for the things that make life itself worthy or miserable, I genuinely believe that Buck and Barker and their rich vultures hurt the soul of every man, hurt every inch of the ground, hurt every brick of the houses that they can capture. And you think I have no right to fight for Notting Hill?
Speaking in the interests of the public.
What the devil are you doing to me? Leave me alone! Give me back my sense of humour! Give it back to me, I say!
But I solemnly assure your majesty that I haven't got it.
No. I really don't think you have.
Adam Wayne had never lived anywhere but Notting Hill, and he regarded it as the universe. He saw the street lamps as being eternal as the stars, and the houses as enduring as mountains. The red and white and yellow suns of the lights seemed like an orchard of fiery trees. This was not just because he was very short-sighted, but because he was a poet. In practice, he was a bad poet, but just as it is too often forgotten that a bad man is still a man, a bad poet is still a poet.
Mr. Chesterton, perhaps if you wouldn't...
very well. Now, I was saying that to Adam Wayne, Notting Hill was the heart of the universe. Now, Pump Street was the heart of Notting Hill, and at the heart of Pump Street were five shops. There was an antique shop containing enough swords and pistols to arm a regiment, a toy and paper shop, a chemist, a barber's shop, and, of course, the grocer, who also sold wine and spirits. Adam went there first.
Good evening, sir. And what can I do for you?
I have come, Mr. Mead, to appeal to your patriotism.
Why, sir, that sounds like the old days when I was a little boy and we used to have elections.
You shall have them again. And even greater things. Listen, Mr. Mead. I can imagine what it must be like to sit all day surrounded by wares from the ends of the earth.
Sir?
No eastern potentate ever had such cargoes coming from sunrise and sunset. You have India at your elbow in that packet of rice, China in that tin of tea, and in picking up that box of dates you hold, do you not? Tunis in your hand.
Quite so. Now, if there's anything you'd like, sir...
Of course you are the opposite of most tradesmen, with their narrow and parochial views. But I come to you in the name of that patriotism that no broad vision should omit. I ask, Mr. Mead, that you remember Notting Hill.
Remember it? Well, I was born here.
Exactly. And now, this city, the city that has made you and your fortune... is threatened with war.
I shall be closing soon, sir. Is there anything I can sell you?
Sell me? Very well, I'll have those.
Oh, pineapple chunks, sir. Oh, certainly. How many tins would you like?
Oh, all of them.
All, sir?
Yes. Yes, every one.
Oh, certainly, sir. It's a great pleasure to serve you, sir. And, of course, you may count on my, patriotism, sir.
I count on it already, Mr. Mead.
Yes, sir. Let me open the door for you. Goodbye, and thank you, sir. What a nice fellow.
Odd how nice they are, really. Much nicer than those who are right in the head. Adam Wayne was pleased with his first attempt at gathering support in Pump Street. He hesitated, however, outside Mr. Bowles, the chemist.
It's a terrible thing to admit, but I'm afraid of this chemist's shop. I have been ever since my childhood. Great though my admiration is for the grocer, he does not sell magic. But Mr. Bowles, his wares are superhuman. And the superhuman is even more to be revered when it is of benefit to humanity. Isn't that the reason why we fear God?
A fine evening, isn't it, sir?
Fine indeed, revered alchemist. It is on such clear and mellow nights that your shop is most itself. Do they not then appear most perfect, your moons of green and gold and crimson? Those moons which from afar guide the pilgrims of pain and sickness to this house of merciful witchcraft.
Yes, sir. What can I get you?
I think I'll have some aspirin, if you please.
Certainly, sir. Small, medium or large bottle?
Oh, large. Large. I have come, Mr. Bowles, to ask you a terrible question.
Sir?
Here in Notting Hill there are those of us who have long respected the mysteries of your profession. And now Notting Hill itself is threatened.
Indeed. Anything more, sir?
What do you have? Cologne? The very best?
Yes, indeed, sir.
Thank you. Now, shall it be destroyed? I have met the men of Bayswater and North Kensington, and I tell you, they are nothing but materialists. They do not see the magic of your work. They think the chemist is commonplace. They believe him to be merely human.
And the next article, sir?
A hairbrush. Let me continue. It is in this sacred city alone that your magic is revered. Therefore, when you fight for us, you fight not only for yourself, but for everything you stand for. You fight not only for Notting Hill, but for Fairyland itself.
One hairbrush, sir. Bristle with silver back. All right, sir?
Splendid.
Anything else, then, sir?
Lozenges. Mm-hmm. A razor. Some of your vitamin syrup. Let me say in all seriousness that the danger is imminent. And the fight is not just for Notting Hill, but for all the places where the greatness of your ideas, our ideas, are allowed to prevail. If the money men win, those places will lose all their magic and their mysteries. I can count on you, can I not?
Indeed, you can, sir. We are always glad to oblige a good customer like yourself. Will you be able to carry everything, sir? Can I provide you with a box?
Adam's enthusiasm was somewhat dissipated by his encounters with the owner of the antique shop and with the barber. They both seemed a little unresponsive to his urgings. It was thus in a gloomy frame of mind that he made his way to the last shop in Pump Street, the toy newspaper shop owned by Mr. Turnbull, who was short, prematurely white, and had the look of a large baby.
Oh, dear.
Need any help, sir?
Indeed I do. Let me put down my parcels. I'm going from house to house in Pump Street, seeking to stir up some sense of the danger which now threatens our city. And nowhere do I feel my task more difficult than in this toy shop of yours.
Why is that, then?
Consider, Mr. Turnbull. I am striking the dark old drum of peril in this paradise of children. But you must not condemn me too hastily. Amidst your dolls and soft toys, do you not also keep soldiers? Witnesses of terror and beauty. That desire for a glorious death which cannot be kept even out of Eden. And you must not despise them on that account. You cannot, Mr. Turnbull.
I don't.
I am very glad to hear it. For it is of war that I have come to speak, Mr. Turnbull. A war for Notting Hill.
War? Really, sir?
What a joke. I'm delighted. That is, I had no idea.
Just a minute, sir. Have you seen these, sir?
Those posters. But they're 15 years old.
They are the record of the last war we had. See what they say. Last small republic annexed. Great slaughter as Nicaraguan capital surrenders. War, you see, sir, happens to be my hobby. Oh, come with me to the back of the shop.
Astonishing. Armies of soldiers
in battle formation.
They represent the American and the Nicaraguan troops arrayed against each other precisely as they were in that last battle.
You mean that military matters are really
my only interest?
Yes. In that case, Mr. Turnbull, I am confident that when it comes to the defense of Notting Hill...
Just come over to this little table, sir. There. What do you see?
I see a precise and perfect plan of Notting Hill in children's bricks.
Precisely. By an extraordinary coincidence, you have hit upon the great secret of my life. I grew up when the last wars of the world were being fought. I bear no ill will to anyone, understand, but war interested me as a science, if you like, or as a game. And then what happened? The big powers of the world, having swallowed up all the small ones, come to an agreement. There is no war. All I can do now is to read out the old campaigns in ancient books and papers and replay them with my model soldiers. Now, one day, purely to amuse myself, I worked out a plan to defend this district of ours should it ever come under attack.
Ever, Mr. Turnbull? It is under attack now. Heaven be praised that I have found one man at least whose life has not been useless. Though your hair is already grey, Mr. Turnbull, you shall have your youth. It has merely been deferred. Explain your plans to me, for you and I have to defend Notting Hill together.
Gentlemen! Gentlemen! We are met together not to fight like bears, but to decide the most difficult of modern problems. May our efforts be crowned with success, and may we all speak one at a time. Mr. Buck.
Your Majesty, this whole matter could be settled in 5 minutes. Pump Street is a small property that's worth $100,000 to us, and that no one else will pay £100 for. We offer the $100,000. Now, it's not businesslike, but we ought to get it for less. But that's our offer, and I'm damned if I can see why it's not acceptable.
Even if you made it a million, Mr. Buck, your offer would still not be acceptable.
Now, look here, Wayne. You can't take up a position like that. His Majesty's government would be perfectly justified in forcing you to accept.
And force you it shall, Wayne. We've done our best to be decent.
And who are you, Mr. Buck, to say that the King of England shall do something?
Yeah, bravo! A point for the red line.
All right. Begging His Majesty's pardon... I meant to say that the government ought to make you accept. No one could deny that we've done our damnedest to be fair.
I would.
Well, Mr. Wayne, I don't want to be rude to you. I hope you won't think me rude if I say that you can be, and in my opinion, ought to be, locked up in jail. To stop public works for a whim such as yours is a criminal act. People have been compelled to sell in the past. The king should, could compel you. And all I'm saying is that I hope he will.
Until he does, the power and the government of this mighty nation is on my side and not yours.
How do you work that out?
I mean, Mr. Barker, that the rights enshrined in this, the Great Charter of the City...
Damn it, Wayne! That thing's a joke!
How can you insult His Majesty to his face?
Enough! I will not sit on me bullied by this thing!
My Lord Buck, I must remind you that you are in the presence of your king. I trust that I shall not have to summon the guards for my protection.
Oh, for God's sake, Your Majesty, don't play your jokes now. Don't go and give this madman your backing, I beg you.
My Lord Provost of South Kensington, I do not understand what you are saying. Perhaps that is due to the rapidity of your speech, which is unusual in our court. I say merely that my Lord Provost of North Kensington, to whom I address myself, ought not, in the presence of his sovereign, to speak disrespectfully of his sovereign's ordinances. Now, do you disagree with that? My Lord Provost of Notting Hill, pray proceed.
Your Majesty, I must apologize. I am more to blame than the Lord Provost of North Kensington. Owing to the fierceness of our argument, we both rose, but I did it first. Therefore, I deserve your rebuke more than Mr. Buck. He is not altogether innocent, for he did, in the heat of the moment, speak with a certain lack of respect. But the rest of the discussion he has conducted with great good temper.
My dear Wayne, you make me feel positively ashamed of my anger.
And for my part, I'll say that Wayne's very kind speech appears to indicate that at last we've got onto a friendly footing. So, Mr. Wayne, what would you say to £150,000? Well, I'm a rich man, and I won't be outdone in generosity. You're a gentleman, Wayne, and you spoke up for me. Come.
150,000 guineas. Shake hands, and the negotiations are at an end. Eh?
They are indeed at an end.
Well, sir,
I'm sorry, but I cannot sell you the property.
What's that?
Mr. Bach appears to have spoken correctly.
I'm very glad to hear you say that, Your Majesty.
You are correct, Mr. Bach, in saying that the negotiations are at an end.
Have I then Your Majesty's permission to leave?
You have.
The man should be put in an asylum. We shouldn't bother any more about him.
You're right there, Barker. Who but a madman would refuse an offer of 150,000 for something he couldn't sell for 5? What we have on our side is common sense. What else is the law based on?
I'll agree with you there, Buck.
Then there's only one thing to do. Let's send in the workers to pull down Pump Street. And if Wayne tries to resist, we have him arrested as a lunatic. What do you say?
I'm with you.
Good.
Your Majesty?
Yes,
sir. We have agreed amongst ourselves on a proposal for which we seek Your Majesty's support. Your Majesty's leniency and our own offers have, alike, fallen in vain on the extraordinary Provost of Notting Hill. He may be right, he may be God, or he may be the devil. What we think most likely is that he's off his head. So, what we propose, Your Majesty, is to start our operations in Notting Hill immediately.
But, Provost Buck, what about the charter of the cities and the guarantees therein enshrined?
I do not wish to say a word against anything Your Majesty has decreed. You're a better educated man than I am. No doubt you had good reasons, intellectual reasons, for everything. But I have a question. When you drew up your charter, had you thought of someone like Wayne coming to power? Did you think that anyone could stop a great business scheme, shut up a motorway, adversely affect traffic conditions, disorganise half the city? Risk, indeed, a kind of civil war. Yes. And all the time hiding behind your charter.
My dear Buck, I congratulate you on your oratory. Your point is well taken.
I just see.
Alas, my scheme did not include a person like Wayne. Would that my poetic power had been great enough to do so.
I thank Your Majesty. Permit me, then, to draw this conclusion. Since your scheme, whatever it was, did not include Mr. Wayne, it will therefore survive his removal. Neither your plans nor ours included the obstruction of Pump Street. Let us therefore remove what has become an obstacle to both of us.
Mr. Buck, I beg your pardon for having ever thought you a fool.
Not at all.
But now I have a question for you.
Sir?
Suppose you send in your workmen and Mr. Wayne does something to them which, however regrettable, I believe him quite capable of doing. Suppose he knocks their teeth out.
Oh, I've thought of that, Your Majesty. Let's send in a guard of, say, 100 men. 100 North Kensington halberdiers, of which Your Majesty is so fond. After all, the whole population of Pump Street can't be more than 100.
They might nevertheless stand together and give you a beating.
Then say we send in 200.
And what if one Notting Hiller fought better than 2 North Kensingtons?
250, then. Fighting is merely a matter of arithmetic, Your Majesty. Say they got together 200 fighters. It's highly improbable. We'll say they did. It's even more improbable that each one of theirs could fight 4 of ours. So we run no risks. We want to finish the business. So, we send in 800 men and smash it. Then we can get on with our improvements.
You will forgive me, Mr. Buck, if I say that the clarity of your argument arouses in me only a desire to punch your head.
Majesty,
what is it that can make me want to do that? Could it be the last vestige of a moral sense?
But Your Majesty does not refuse the proposals put forward by our brother Buck.
My dear James, I want nothing to do with them. What if I stopped them, refused my consent? What would happen then?
Revolution.
Well, gentlemen, I see I am overruled, but I am still allowed to speak my mind. I want you to know that I consider Adam Wayne, who is as mad as a hatter, to be worth 1,000,000 of you. But you have the force, and so he is lost.
With 5 or 6 times their number, there will be no fight at all.
We trust not, Your Majesty. We don't want to fight. We're merely peaceable men of business.
Then this conference is truly at an end. God's name, James, let Notting Hill alone. I appeal to you as an old friend. All I was hoping for was a bit of fun.
Listen, Oberon. You may not believe me, but there have been moments when I have understood even the madness of someone like Adam Wayne. But I have to tell you that the world, the real world, runs on great, brutal wheels of fact. Wheels on which people like you and Wayne are just butterflies.
Thank you, James. It's little consolation to think that butterflies have more intelligence than wheels, I suppose. Wheels go on forever. Whereas the life of the butterfly is doomed to be short. Ah, well. Go on, old man. Go and be a wheel. Have you ever thought how ludicrous eating is? The poet scribbles his immortal verses, the musician strums his lyre, and then what do? They go and stuff alien substances into a hole in their heads.
Bach is going to win. We're just waiting for news of the victory.
Yesterday, I really did think I was going to see a first-class miracle. That red-haired maniac, Adam Wayne, waving his great sword and making impassioned speeches to his inflamed followers. And I'd plan some jolly things myself. Perhaps a Roman triumph for Wayne, with good old Barker being led about in chains.
I don't believe he'd think much of that, old man.
Yeah. Instead, he and those prigs of Provost will stamp out the wonderful Wayne and put him in some private asylum. All in the name of humanity. What a waste. What a pity. What's that?
What's what?
There's someone trying to get over that fence, that's what. It's a blasted stampede! I say, you fellas, watch out for the king's navel! Oh, look, there's Barker. I say, he looks in a fine state.
Barker! What is all this? What's happening? Where are you running?
Beaten! God damn it! Oberon! We're beaten all to hell!
Barker, what happened?
How should I know? It was like a dream. How can 200 men beat 600? You tell me, Buck. You tell me.
Well, you were there, weren't you? You ought to know.
Things happen of themselves and you have nothing to do with them, and that's what's so awful.
What things?
I found myself in the gutter, shot half senseless, and was beaten down again by a horde of roaring men. I know I got two of them, and I laughed. And got knocked down and picked myself up and struck out again and again until my halberd broke in pieces. Well, that's what happened, Buck. Does it make sense to you?
Damn and blast the king with all his stupid notions. Damn and blast Wayne for taking them seriously. Damn and blast the pair of them for the way they've got us, civilized men of the last years of the 20th century, to be part of their stupid game.
You've never been in a fight, Buck. You don't know how exhilarating it can be.
I don't want to know. I thought such feelings have vanished forever from an educated world.
So did I. But with a pole axe in my hand, I know they haven't.
Well then, first blood to Adam Wayne. But it'll be next and last blood to us.
We must study fighting, Barker. So
so that I'm as familiar with it as I am with business, and you understand it as well as you do politics.
I'm ready.
I still believe the whole thing is a matter of arithmetic. How can 200 men beat 600? Why, when the 600 behave like fools, when they forget the conditions they're fighting in, when they don't know what street fighting is.
And what is it?
Obvious. Common sense. Streets lead from one place to another. They join like this Crescent and Portobello Road. Mm-hmm. If the enemy holds the Crescent, they can fall on you and cut your force in two. See?
Yes. Though I don't see what we could have done about it.
It is a matter of arithmetic. How many entries has Pump Street got?
Without looking at your map,
Not 900, right? Not 9 million, neither. Not a number that grows in the night or increases like mushrooms after a shower. We have an overwhelming force at our disposal. We should be able to put the same number into every entrance to Pump Street as Wayne has altogether. Then how could we lose?
You mean if...
I mean that however spirited Adam Wayne's first skirmish was, it will be, I am almost sorry to say, his last victory.
Well spoken, Buck. You're absolutely right.
Yes.
You've made me see sense again. We got our sums wrong and so deserve to lose. But if we hold all the approaches... When shall we start our new campaign?
Now!
Tell you, sir, that we are victorious. Pump Street is captured.
Yeah! Oh, but which way are they retreating? We shall hold fast here. Go and tell your master to do the same by St. Luke's. Run! Soldiers, forward to the attack. Victory is ours. Quick!
What a fraud all this so-called military genius is. Cromwell was right. A sensible tradesman is the best general. He who can buy and sell men can just as well lead and kill them. Just like adding up figures in a ledger. The trouble with all these clever types is that they fail to reason properly. And I'm not clever. But at least I can see things as God sees them, as a vast machine. I can see... What's this? What's happening?
Did I blaspheme? God has struck me blind! No! No! We are fools! We're all of us fools! Don't you see? The street lamps have gone out, that's all!
Where is the army?
Two soldiers have been coming towards us. Men! Empire! Revenge!
Your Majesty, you will forgive my disturbing you without ceremony, yes. But the situation...
You were an eyewitness, eh, Mr. Buck? Though I see from your bandage that, unfortunately, you have only one eye to witness with. Pray, tell me what occurred. Well, I should tell you that I have appointed myself war correspondent of Palace Radio, and I'm eager for your impressions.
All I can tell your Majesty...
Your Majesty!
Is that... Ah, here's Barker. What's happening out there now?
They're still fighting. Wilson's men from Bayswater did uncommon well. You know they took Punt Street once last night? Mad, isn't it? To think that little Wilson came out best.
I shall go to the scene myself.
Your Majesty's presence can only...
I know my duty. The world shall have my first dispatch this very evening. Farewell.
Well, there's not much we can do, is there?
Nonsense.
We can beat Wayne now, this minute.
Oh, yes? How, may I ask?
The sun's up, isn't it? And now we can see we can hold all the approaches to Pump Street and smash him to smithereens. Learn from our mistakes. That's business for you.
If anyone is learning from mistakes, it's Wayne.
Eh?
Do you know what he was doing while we were fighting each other in the dark?
What?
Building barricades, that's what. Every road to Pump Street is now barred by a barricade as big as a house.
Damn the man! Damn him to hell!
Is our motorway worth all this trouble, Buck? I mean, I know it was going to be a wonderful enterprise when we started, but now, with the cost of crushing Wayne...
Give in to a red-haired madman, any doctor would certify.
Your red-haired madman is filling this very room with his roaring. Don't you see? All that stuff you said about your men fighting so bravely, that's the kind of thing he says, isn't it?
Whatever the case, I'm not giving in, Barker. This buck's not for turning. Not ever.
To halt in the name of Notting Hill. Excuse me, ladies and gentlemen, but my orders are to stop all vehicles from entering Pump Street. If you would like to descend...
Madeline. And who do I have the honor of addressing?
My name, sir, is Bowles, chemist and captain of O Company in the Army of Notting Hill. I'm sorry to have to inconvenience you, but... Oh, my goodness, I beg your Majesty's pardon. I'm quite overwhelmed to find myself concerned with the King.
You are not concerned with the King. You are concerned with the special war correspondent of Palace Radio.
I beg your Majesty's pardon.
I am not your Majesty, but a representative of that even higher calling, the media. It is with a sense of deep responsibility that I have chosen the name of Pinker. I desire that we draw a veil over the past.
Well, Mr. Pinker, in our eyes, the sanctity of the press is at least as great as that of the throne. We desire nothing better than that our wrongs and our glories should be widely known. May I ask your Mr. Pinker, if you would have any objection to being presented to the Provost and to General Turnbull?
The Provost, I have had the honor of meeting. We old journalists, you know, we get to meet almost everybody. But it would be a pleasure to meet the General. The younger men are so interesting.
Then, if you would be so good as to follow me...
I am always good, Mr. Bowles. Lead on. I am now in Pump Street, which, as you know, is in a state of siege. That is to say, nothing is happening. There is peace with all the inconvenience of war. The place is stocked with food, piled high with tins and things. In fact, there is remarkably little room to turn round. But one has to ask, what good will it do? Doesn't it just mean postponing the inevitable defeat to a time when the victories will have been forgotten? I put this question to Provost Wayne, who is with me now.
Our morale is extremely high. We do not accept the possibility of defeat.
But you are vastly outnumbered, Mr. Wayne. And even you would admit the superb generalship of your opponent, Provost Wilson of Bayswater.
Yes, I pay him tribute. Though he only held Pump Street for half an hour yesterday, his taking it was a surprise to us all. You know he owns a sweet shop in the area.
I was not aware of that, no.
Well, he does. And I've been buying sweets there since I was 4 years old. But he charged our defences like a devil from hell, and good luck to him. Though we shall be ready next time.
May I ask, Provost, what you propose to do?
You may ask, but I shall not answer. There are some surprises in store, I can promise you that. Notting Hill will not be defeated, even though her enemies outnumber her 10-1.
I am
am now walking past the barricades to Pembridge Road, where before me stretch the mighty numbers of the Allied forces. Curving round the edge of the road, I can see what look like fairy lights, but they are, in fact, lanterns slung round each soldier's neck. And as I look down the road... Hello. The lights appear to be going out, one by one. Hello? Hello? I've just been knocked down by a horse. Do you hear me? In Pembridge Road in the year 1994, the king... I mean, the special war correspondent of Palace Radio has been kicked in the head and is actually bleeding. So that was what was blotting out the lanterns. A great body of horses. I fancied I saw Provost Wayne leading this sortie. And now comes a body of Allied troops led by... it's General Barker. I wonder if I might ask... Excuse me, Mr. Barker!
What is it?
Perhaps you would like to tell the listeners what is going on.
Oh, I wish I knew. It was Wayne, all right.
Surely you'd agree, General, that most Londoners, that is to say, most sane, modern people, regard Wayne's farcical patriotism with as much contempt as they do the idiocy that gave it birth, the folly of our miserable king.
Idiocy, yes. Folly, yes. As for regarding it with contempt, I'm not sure. Time will tell. Now, if you'll excuse me, I must go and consult with my fellow generals. Come on, men. Yes.
In restless pursuit of the truth, I am now walking back to Pump Street. There is a feeling of excitement here which contrasts with the dullness that usually attends a siege. The maneuver with horses was obviously well planned, though we still don't know the reason for it. Ah, here comes the one man who might be able to tell us. General Turnbull!
Yes?
Commander-in-Chief of the forces of Notting Hill. Can you spare a moment, General?
Certainly, certainly.
Always glad to talk to you fellows. We in Notting Hill are great believers in the free press, as you know, and I speak as a newsagent.
Perhaps you could tell us, General, where you got the horses.
I bribed a group of small boys. About 40 of them, as a matter of fact.
And what did you bribe them to do, General?
To take cabs all over London and to bring them here.
So, in fact, you have stolen these animals?
Merely borrowed them on a temporary basis. If you want to know, we've looked after them a sight better than their owners. Training them for their mission was a pleasure.
And what exactly was their mission?
You wouldn't expect me to say, I'm sure. Not before it is accomplished, anyhow.
Very well, General. Thank you.
Not at all. Thank you.
So, the mission remains a mystery. I am returning to the ranks of the besiegers. In front of me, there is a wall of dark blue uniforms, those of South Kensington, armed with a veritable forest of halberds and poleaxes. To their rear, you can probably hear the clank of their weapons, is Wilson's great army of green guards marching to the west. They are already the distinguished veterans of the campaign. Each of them wears a silver medal in the shape of a pump, in recognition of the fact that, alone amongst the Allies, they have stood victorious, however briefly, in Pump Street. And now... I'm running to catch up with Wilson's men, who are in the pursuit of Wayne. There's some confusion. The forward march has halted. The men have turned. I'm being crushed by our own fighters. And here come the horses. We're again caught in the middle of a cavalry charge. Do you hear them?
Come on, lads! There's nothing to be afraid of. Those horses have no riders!
That was the voice of General Wilson. I'll see if I can snatch a quick word. General!
Left wheel, up the hill there!
Evening, Your Majesty! Fun, ain't it?
General... Why do you think those horses were riderless?
Haven't the foggiest, Your Majesty.
Do you think it means that Wayne has been defeated?
Well, we shan't know till we caught up with him, shall we? But they've gone up the hill in a great hurry, I can tell you. Perhaps they've turned the horses loose because they couldn't take them up with them.
Is this some mad new form of warfare, then?
I fancy they're trying to get over the ridge to Kensington or Hammersmith. But they've not reckoned on our last outpost by the water tower. Lambert's holding that, and I've made sure he's got word and he's ready.
Wilfred Lambert?
His name is Wilfred, yes. Bit of a silly fellow with a damn great nose. Volunteer like a lot of that type. War seems to attract him. But he's not all bad, I'll give him that. Real pluck. He's pulled the yellers of West Ken really together, and that took some doing.
I know he had pluck. He's an old friend. His first engagement was to criticise my sense of humour.
Well, I don't know anything about that, but he's over there. Look at him!
We've just been knocked nearly senseless. Hello? We have just been knocked nearly senseless by a body of men who are bleeding and carrying broken halberds. They're dressed in the red uniforms of Notting Hill. That must be...
Oh, Lambert! Well done!
See what he's done? What? He's got to the top of the hill and he's driving him back.
Forward the greens! And
Excuse me, Your Majesty. I must get on.
I am now standing in the shadow of the Waterworks Tower on Campden Hill. My listeners will perhaps forgive me if I say that my first impression is an artistic one. Suddenly, to be at the foot of this tower is to realize how extraordinarily high it is. You can probably hear the sounds of battle raging. Of course, what is going on is more enduring than stone and concrete. It is the agony of man, which makes even this overwhelming tower a triviality. And standing a little way off, his noble profile illuminated by the moonlight, is my old friend Wilfred Lambert. Lambert! What have you to say to our listeners?
We're going to win, that's all.
Will it be an easy victory, do you think?
I wouldn't say that, no.
But all you're fighting is something that's futile and impossible, something that's already dead.
I don't know what you're talking about, but then I never did. All I know is that I've got a job to do here. Oh, look, there's Wayne.
Yes, I can see him. He has just jumped up on the top of the wall that surrounds the waterworks. He looks enormous in the moonlight, a gigantic figure. That noise you hear is the red banner of Notting Hill, which Thomas Wayne has just seized from the hands of his standard bearer below him and is now waving furiously.
Round the Red Lion! Swords and halberds rally round the banner!
They're trying to rally! Drop that public house banner of yours, Wayne! Don't be a fool! Get around it! Drop your flag, I say!
The banner of the Red Lion seldom stoops!
Lambert has just leapt onto the wall carrying his sword between his teeth. What a hero that man is. He slashes at Wayne's head. The provost is so busy with his flag he hasn't the time to draw his sword. Lambert's cut makes him step back. Now he's aiming the sharp point of the flagstaff at his attacker and...
The banner of Notting Hill stoops to a hero.
Adam Wayne has speared Wilfred Lambert with the flagstaff and dropped him dead on the street below.
Notting Hill! Notting Hill! Her banner is all the holier for the blood of a brave enemy! Up on the wall, ye patriots! Up beside me, Notting Hill forever!
Wayne is dragging his followers up onto the wall beside him. More and more of them are silhouetted against the moon, but General Wilson...
You'll get it now! Beast, whatever and ever!
Wilson's green guards and the remnants of Lambert's yellows are fighting fiercely with the Scarlet of Notting Hill. I can see blood running down the streets in great red serpents that shine in the moon. I'm sorry. I cannot go on. The sight is too horrible. I'm sickened by it.
Notting Hill! Victory is ours! We have even caught our enemy! Patriotism is worth fighting for! Yeah!
It is now morning, and still the fighting goes on. But it is a farce. Provost Buck, I am told, has victory in his grasp, using the simplest, and I have to say, the nastiest method of recruitment. Money. Consequently, he now has a fresh army, almost as large as the force now in the field. I'm not going to stay here to witness the final defeat of Notting Hill. This is the war correspondent of Palace Radio, signing off for the first and last time.
Impressive sight, eh, Your Majesty?
Yes.
I don't think there's many people who've lived long enough to remember an army of this size on the streets of London.
I've no doubt you're right, Mr. Buck.
At least it'll mean an end to the fighting. You'd agree with that, wouldn't you, Your Majesty?
I wouldn't be too sure, James.
Well, I am. I've already sent a herald up to Wayne asking him to surrender. Even he isn't mad enough to argue with numbers like these. They are perhaps 300. We are nearly 5,000. If odds like that amuse them, so be it.
You expect him to submit?
I wouldn't be surprised if he refused to do what you think.
Do you want to bet on it, Your Majesty?
All right, I will.
£10 to a penny, the Herald comes with Wayne's surrender.
Done.
Right.
I may be wrong, but I think he'll die in his city, and until he's dead, it will not be a safe property.
Right. Let's see. Hey, Your Majesty. I'd take him money from a child. Here comes the Red Herald from Wayne.
I am rather short-sighted, but
why don't you go, Barker? Receive the message. After all, you are officially our Commander-in-Chief, aren't you?
Very well. Herald, has your master received our request that he surrender?
He has, sir.
And what answer does your master send?
My message is this. Adam Wayne, Lord High Provost of Notting Hill, under the charter of King Oberon and the laws of God and mankind, free and of a free city, greets James Barker, Lord High Provost of South Kensington, by the same rights, free and honourable, leader of the Army of the South. With all friendly reverence and with all constitutional consideration, he desires James Barker to lay down his arms and the whole army under his command to lay down their arms also.
What did I say?
Ridiculous!
The Lord High Provost of Notting Hill does not propose to use his victory for any of those repressive purposes which others have entertained against him. He will leave you your free laws and free cities, your flags and your government.
This must be one of your jokes, Your Majesty. It's too good for words. Do you want me in a glass?
A little early for me.
The Lord Provost of Notting Hill desires to announce that he has captured the waterworks tower above you on Camden Hill. If you refuse, through me, his request, he desires me to say that within 10 minutes he will open the great reservoir and flood the entire valley where you stand in 30 feet of water. God save King Oberon!
Damn and blast!
Do you think he can?
Oh, he can, all right.
We have no alternative. Do we, Buck?
It's mathematics. What can 5,000 men do against 50,000 tons of water rushing down a steep hill?
Nothing?
We must surrender. Well, Your Majesty, I owe you a tenner. And we might as well all have a glass of wine.
It was in this way that the vast army raised through Mr. Buck's finances surrendered in its entirety, and the Empire of Notting Hill began. Incidentally, Adam Wayne ordered that the great tower on Camden Hill be plated with gold and inscribed with an epitaph to Wilfred Lambert. The monument was topped with a statue to the hero. Unfortunately, his large nose was done something less than justice to.
We've come to the bit where you jump 20 years, Mr. Chesterton. May I suggest...
Yes, of course. You should have transmitted this production in 1984, 80 years after the book was written.
Well, you see, there were certain difficulties. And since it's now 50 years since you... since your...
You may say death, my friend. It has no power to disturb me anymore.
Quite. Well, about the 20-year leap, if you could...
In my view, the most direct way is usually the best. No, how about this? I must now ask my listeners to cast themselves forward to the year 2014, 20 years after the victory of Notting Hill that gave it dominion over London. The city is enriched with copper and scarlet and gold in memory of the battles fought and won, and the people disport themselves in medieval garb. King Oberon toddles out of his palace in Kensington. He's changed little, save for a streak or two of grey.
To think that people once considered me a buffoon for suggesting that Notting Hill might be romantic. Wayne and his great sword have made the whole world romantic now.
And he continues on his way, saluted with affection by his people. Turning a corner, the king by chance finds himself in Pump Street. On a whim, he enters the grocer's. Its owner, Mr. Mead, is now dressed in a long and richly embroidered robe of blue, brown, and crimson, intricately patterned with symbols representing his wares, passing from nation to nation and hand to hand.
Your Majesty, this is an honor to me, but even more an honor to our city.
My dear Mr. Mead, Notting Hill, whether in giving or taking, deals in nothing but honor. Do you have any licorice?
Oh, licorice, sire, is not the least of the benefits derived from the dark heart of Arabia.
It's prettily said. And what pretty tins you keep it in. In the shape of a mosque, eh? Mm. Oh, and do you remember the days before the war when things were kept in wrappings of hygienic dullness and everything looked the same?
Indeed, Your Majesty. And then I thought nothing of being a grocer. All the wonderful places my goods came from, the wonderful ways they were made, all that meant nothing to me. Yet I am like a king myself, able to gather about me the fruits of the entire world.
Indeed. Indeed. And how much is the licorice? They all sound like Wayne used to sound. Lord, what a strange world in which a man cannot remain unique even by going mad.
Oh, there you are, sir.
Oh, thank you. Thank you, Mr. Mead.
Thank you, sir.
By the Lord of Luck, my old friend James Barker, I haven't seen you for years.
Well met, Your Majesty. I see you still affect the fashions of our youth.
I must say you look pretty good in your Renaissance gown. Where does one find a tailor to slash the blue velvet to show the yellow beneath in that fashion?
I can give you his name, sire.
No, my dear James. I'm a relic and must behave as such.
I wonder if I might unburden myself to Your Majesty.
It's rather late for you to change the habits of a lifetime, isn't it, James? Fire away.
Well, Your Majesty, we have not met often since the last war. I have to tell you that I don't believe it will be long until the next.
Another war? Over what?
We can stand it no longer. We are not slaves just because we were chased with a water pipe 20 years ago. Notting Hill does not rule the world. We in South Kensington also have our hopes, our memories, and our pride. If they fought for these little shops and some lampposts, why shouldn't we fight for the glories of our high street? For our sacred natural history museum?
Wonders never cease. Have you turned patriot then and Wayne become a tyrant?
It is not from Wayne himself that the evil comes. It's the council and the people of Notting Hill who are the tyrants. They've become so intoxicated with Wayne's visions that they try to meddle with everybody. Civilize them by telling them all what's good for them. Even when Bayswater wants to put up a statue to General Wilson, the word is that Notting Hill will veto it. If that's true, it's a shameless breach of our terms of surrender.
It is true.
Buck, is it you?
It is. Greetings to Your Majesty.
And greetings to you, my dear sir.
Would not Your Majesty agree that it is sometimes very foolish, if not mean in spirit, to despise those you have beaten?
I would consider it impolitic, certainly.
Yet that is what Notting Hill is doing. There are times when I still feel like having a go at smashing it, though I'm over 60. I may tell you both, I have been instrumental in organizing an alliance against Wayne, 100 cities against his one, just waiting for the signal.
Is that your signal?
No, it's not. I wonder what... Darkness! It's gone dark again!
Oh, didn't you know, gentlemen, this is the Feast of the Lamps.
the anniversary of our great battle. We turn out all the lights for half an hour every year on this night so that everyone will remember the salvation of our city. Their damned army parading again. I've had enough. South Kensington! South Kensington forever!
I'm behind you,
Put up your swords! Put up your swords and turn up the light! In the name of Notting Hill and the great council of the city, turn up the light!
It's Wayne.
Where?
They're turning up the lights. Look, there he is, on that high balcony. Warm pretty well, hasn't he? But of course it can't last.
My people, my people! We are an independent nation. Why should we want to become a mere empire? Our victory is that we have infected the other cities with our idealism. Is there not a gigantic silver hammer like an obelisk in the center of Hammersmith Broadway? Does not a great knight now stand in the middle of Knightsbridge? Why should we want to interfere with them? Or prevent the erection of a statue to General Wilson, our brave enemy? Who would have thought of putting up such things before Notting Hill arose? We have made men realize what it is to live in a city. We have invented our own symbols and ceremonies. They have invented theirs. Are you so mad that you will fight them for doing so? Remember this. Remember this. Notting Hill is a nation that has created itself. Because it is a nation, it can also destroy itself. But Notting Hill shall judge. If it is your will to make war on Bayswater because of General Wilson's statue. My people, my people!
Well, Turnbull, old friend, tomorrow we shall have a new experience.
And what is that, pray?
We shall be defeated. You and I have been through great battles together and have never experienced defeat. What a pity we shan't be able to tell one another what it's like.
Why shouldn't we?
Because, dear fellow, as most annoyingly happens, we shall probably both be dead.
Oh, I don't mind that so much. But what makes you so sure we shall be defeated?
Simple. We shall be defeated because we ought to be.
Excuse me.
Your Majesty, I had no idea.
No, never mind all that. Is it true, Adam Wayne, that you believe you will be beaten if there is a war tomorrow?
I have no doubt about it. Did you hear what I said to Turnbull? We deserve to be beaten, and we shall be.
They have organized an army from 100 allied cities against our one, mind you.
That is not what matters.
You have no doubt of the outcome?
None whatever.
Then give me a halberd. I desire all men to witness that I, Oberon, King of England, do here and now abdicate. I implore the Provost of Notting Hill to permit me to enlist in his army. A halberd, I say! Give me a halberd!
Well, Your Majesty, how do you like army life?
I'm not Your Majesty any longer, Wayne. I'm just a halberd here. And it's my view that you ought to look a good deal happier than you do.
Why? When there is no rightness to our cause.
You mustn't say that to a common soldier. Very bad for morale, you know?
I feel out of date, Your Majesty.
Huh?
There was a time when I thought my ideas and yours inspired. But now all I represent is one empire against another. I don't know right from wrong anymore. And that's the terrible truth.
We know what is right. We halberdiers. And we're prepared to die for it, whatever you say. Don't try and confuse us now.
Well, Your Majesty, you have something to be proud of. We are all your children. And if we fight one another, at least the victors will still be your children.
Look at them all.
See?
see the new cities marching across the river against us?
Yes.
See Battersea, advancing under its banner of the Lost Dog. Ah, your majesty, it is the advance of a new age. Notting Hill has given birth to a whole new manner of living. Like Athens, like Nazareth. Do you remember what the wise men and prophets used to say?
No. Only that they were invariably wrong.
I remember books prophesying that trains would get faster, and the world would be one empire, and trams would go to the moon. And even as a child, I used to say to myself, it is far more likely that we shall go on the Crusades again, or worship the gods of the city. And so it has proved. Which makes me glad, even if this is my last battle. General Wilson's men are attacking. Ah, but he is a brave fighter. As keen as our General Turnbull, but less patient, and less great.
That's some comfort at any rate.
And here comes General Barker, closing on our right. He's improved, don't you think?
He looks good in velvet and broom, certainly. Fashions of the day become him.
He has stole, that's what matters. See Turnbull readies his men for a charge. Forward, Notting Hill!
We seem to be winning. Is that possible, General Turnbull?
The enemy are too careless and too confident. See, we have smashed Barker. Now for Buck. Ah, and there he is. I have had my youth. Notting Hill forever!
What a man. Straight into the sea of battle.
Wayne? Is that you up against that tree?
It is I, General Barker.
And how large, my lord, is the Empire of Notting Hill now? You must be the last one left alive. Even brave Turnbull is dead.
While I still have my sword, General, the Empire of Notting Hill will always be as large as this. I can still keep your men at bay, can't I? And you, General Barker, and General Buck, and even General Wilson. My sword and I are still something to be reckoned with, eh?
Have at him, Barker. Don't stand there toying. Let me have a go. Here. Wounded him at least. And grabbed his red and yellow flavor. What are you going to do without your colors, eh, Wayne?
I have them still. I tear at the yellow of one of your West Kensington men. So, and now I dip it in my own gore. Red and yellow. I have my favor, General Wilson. Blood red, yellow silk. That is all I need.
Red and yellow. Nicaragua.
Never mind the king. He's at it. But I'm coming for you, Wayne. I am a dead man.
You've killed Wilson.
He fought as bravely as always.
And in dying, he has broken Wayne's great sword. Come, Barker. There is nothing to be afraid of now. He's only the tree to protect him. Let us kill him.
Careful, Barker.
We have been careful too long. He has blinded us all these years. I shall kill him myself.
Ah, General Buck. I may lack the protection of my sword, but this tree will furnish me with a weapon.
You don't frighten me, Wayne.
Buck, are you all right?
I have broken his neck.
A last effort, men, for the final struggle. Come, wounded though I am, I shall lead you to victory. Come, pull him off this tree. He's slipping. He's going, men! Pull together now! He's rocking!
As the tree falleth, so shall it lie.
It was only a joke, you know.
It began in blood, and it ended in blood. And all things are always the same.
People will laugh at your Notting Hill.
With every new baby, a new sun and a new moon are made. Notting Hill has fallen. Notting Hill has died. But that is not important. What matters is that Notting Hill lived.
Would anything have been different if it hadn't?
Something would have been eternally lost.
It was still all a joke, Wayne.
It was not a joke.
I have to confess it to you, since I am a dying man.
I too am dying, Your Majesty. When you had the idea of an army of Bayswater and a flag of Notting Hill, there was no thought that such things could be real and passionate.
None.
I thank you, nevertheless, for the great good you have done the world.
No. No way.
You and I, Oberon Quinn, have both of us throughout our lives been called mad. And mad we are. Do you know why?
I can't think anymore.
Because we are not two men, but one. We are mad because we are two lobes of the same brain. And that brain has been cloven in two.
What are you talking about?
Though we seem to be the opposite in everything, we are only opposite like man and woman, aiming at the same moment at the same thing. We are together the father and the mother of the Charter of the Cities.
But I laughed at it. And you adored it.
There is no antagonism between laughter and adoration. Does not the mother laugh at her child while adoring it? Do not lovers laugh at one another? When the dark days come, you and I, the fanatic and the satirist, are both necessary.
You really think so?
Between us, we have remedied a great wrong. We have lifted the modern cities into that poetry which everyone who knows mankind knows to be far more common than commonplace. In healthy people, there is no war between us. Come. We have been too long separated.
Where are we going?
Let us go out together. You have your halberd, I have a sword. Let us start our wanderings over the world, for we are its two essentials.
And in the blank white light of day, Oberon hesitated a moment. Then he made the formal salute with his halberd, and he and Adam Wayne went together into the unknown world, the world I now inhabit. Pray for us.
That was The Napoleon of Notting Hill by G.K. Chesterton, who was also played by Roger Hammonds. Oberon Quinn was played by David Collings, Wilfred Lambert by Kim Wall, James Barker by Stephen Hattersley, and President Del Fuego by Manning Wilson. The policeman and Mr. Wilson were played by Stuart Organ, Adam Wayne by Alexander Goodman and Paul McGann. Mr. Buck was played by Aubrey Woods, Mr. Mead by Paul Gregory, Mr. Bowles by Brian Hewlett, and Mr. Turnbull by Gordon Reed. The Napoleon of Notting Hill was dramatised by Peter Buckman.